And any ideas about those questions?
Well, I don't know. I'd like to see IRA councils or the traditional councils. I'd like to see everybody join in, and because as it is now, the afterborns and the ones that don't have enough blood quantum cannot cannot benefit in any way, and I think the only way that we ever can benefit is through an actively working council where we live, and that way our families will always be served or serviced, or and hopefully they will have the land and everything to enjoy the hunting and the fishing. And I'd like to see our regional corporations and village corporations and our traditional and IRA councils all pulling together and working together to achieve all these goals.
Well, you've got a badge that says sovereignty, and I take it that you've really just been talking about sovereignty without using the word. Have I understood you?
Yes.
Well, you put it all quite well, without threatening to start a new country and apply for admission to the United Nations or something like that.
I don't think we want that. We just want what was rightfully ours thousands of years ago.
Thanks very much,
Thank
Mr. Roberts.
May I say something, just to say what I think about the land, selling the land in 91. I feel that it's a wrong thing to have it done that way, and that any of the people that have them, we all will have the right to stand. And any people who are short of money and need money badly, which is often the way it is, after a poor season and so on, it's just very easy to see that people are going to get rid of the land and they will be left with nothing. And that most people will do that. And these seasons have been so poor and scattered here now and then, quite often, it seems to me it's just quite certain that the land will not stay with the people. They will be selling it.
Yes. Could we have your name, ma'am? Just
Eunice Nesseth.
Thank you very much. Yes, sometimes people believe in a general principle and yet are willing to concede that when they're in a tough spot, they might do something because they just don't have any choice. They have to do it, and that's a very important consideration.
It would be very good to change that, for sure.
Mrs. Nethis just said, I think a very good parallel is what has happened with the limited entry program in Alaska. The studies show that the permits that were granted to Alaska Native people there are being transferred away into people from outside the state in greater numbers, so that it's going to be the larger number of the people that own the rights to fish in the state are going to be from the cities or even outside the state. And this is a good illustration of what Mrs. Neff has just said. People fall into hard times, and they see a source of ready cash, and those things can be picked up for a lot less than they're actually worth. And I think that this is one of the problems that provisions for the sale of stock isn't changed, the same thing's going to happen here, so that eventually the people that do retain their stock are not going to necessarily have control of the corporations that they belong to, but it'll be somebody else that has stepped in and gotten the majority control.
Thank you, Mr. Metzen. That point has been raised in quite a few other coastal villages about limited entry, and as Mr. Madsen suggests, if people are willing to surrender a limited entry permit,
you don't have that now, I believe. I think it's at large. So your representation can come entirely out of the urban area. And several of the village corporations that are represented even here this evening are generally native people that live here in Kodiak and conduct profit business. Again, I would say that ANCSA, as a result of ANCSA, we have seen our people alienated. One of the examples that we recently experienced was the village of Karluk again, which is not incorporated under state law. It did incorporate as a village corporation for the purpose of receiving lands and monies under the act. However, in 1980, our shareholders decided to merge with Koniag. Only two villages are still merged with Koniag, and that's created a problem. Our people live on a river, it's about 20-some miles long, and they are dependent upon the resources of that river. There is no store in the village. Oil costs about $90 for a 55-gallon drum of oil. And it's very expensive to live out there. But fishing was really bad this summer, and I know that some of the families just living around my house were eating fish three times a day. That was common years ago. It's not as common today in some of the other villages. But Karluk had a store before. They had a fuel supply, and they don't today. They have new housing. They had to relocate the village because of erosion. They're up the river. They've got to make house payments now, and of course oil payments. They don't have an electrical distribution system. So things are really tough, and they are dependent upon that river. And we've asked Interior to come in and assist us, because we have absolutely no control over the river. We joint selected the village of Karluk, joint selected with Larson Bay, the entire river, and the Karluk Lake. Today we have title to nothing. We placed our complete confidence in the regional corporation, and as a result of it, we have title to nothing. It's been all turned over to the region. The region made a commitment to give us back 1,860 acres of land for 100-some thousand acres. Our land, our river is considered navigable. However, the region has title, I believe, to the surface lands under the river. So we've got quite a predicament. We'd like to try to get some kind of assistance. And like I said, we don't have the funds to do it. We've got approximately $39,000. We have the responsibilities as a result of a resolution passed by the IRA traditional council to assist in getting our lands turned over to the tribal council. And in the resolution, it also states that we're responsible for the 14C lands. And the way it sits right now, we just don't have the funds to do that.
That's a resolution passed by the IRA.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Could I ask you a couple of questions?
Mm-hmm.
You said that you had been active in a number of these corporations and regional and local and so on, going back even before ANCSA. One of the things that Congress intended was that these corporations would eventually start paying dividends and there would be a stream of income going to Native people from the corporations. The other thing they thought people would get out of it would be jobs. And just from your perspective, thinking back to what people's expectations were, what about jobs? Has ANCSA produced jobs in this region?
Very little. Very little.
And
three of the village corporations, Old Harbor, Larson Bay, and Carlick, formed a subsidiary, Kodiak Island Seafoods, and purchased a cannery from Alaska Packers. You'll see it when you go to Larson Bay. And within a matter of years, we lost it. It basically was a poor investment, but I don't think it still didn't produce that many jobs.
When you had it, or when you got it, the idea was not only to make money, but to provide jobs for shareholders.
That's right.
And it was an operating cannery when you got it, I suppose. So it had some employees.
It had been over the years, yes, but they imported a lot of the employment, our employees from other areas. But that was one of the intents, is to create more employment for our people on the island.
And during the years that you ran it, were you able to provide any significant number of jobs for people?
But fight for the land to get to retain it, that we might have a future. But as long as the corporations own it and control it, we won't have a chance, because that land claims has taken away the authority of Native tribal members over the land.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, for the record, my name is Nancy Anderson. I apologize for coming in late. I thought it started at 8 o'clock. I'll apologize soon because I'll be leaving early. I'd like to welcome you to Kodiak and the rest of your members here. And what I'll talk about right now is the land and the stock. 1991 is right around the corner. And what's going to happen to our stock when it becomes saleable? I heard two sides to the story. One group said, I'm going to sell all my stocks because it isn't worth anything anyway. And then I hear others saying, I'll never sell my stock because if I do, I'm selling my land. And I'm not going to sit up here and try to convince the shareholders how to vote. But I think we should start asking ourselves questions, from perhaps some of your family members also, because this is a decision that you will have to be making. All I'm going to do is stress some of my own opinions, because I've been involved with the Native movement for 14 years. Is that better? We have to realize how valuable our Koniak land is to us. And we need this land, if nothing else, but only for subsistence. We could lose our land in so many different ways. One, if we don't pay our taxes when they're due. Another, if you allow trespassing, you don't say or do anything about it. Pretty soon you lose your rights to that. And we could sell it. We'll have to start thinking about what to do when we lose our tax-exempt statuses. That's going to be a big problem right there. We need an economic base in which to work from. One thing for sure will happen on December 18, 1991. On that date, the Native corporations organized under ANCSHA will cancel all outstanding stock and issue new stock to shareholders. The new stock will be able to sell, will be able to pledge, use as collateral to get loans. And we may be offered large amounts of money. If the majority of it sells to non-natives, we will lose control of our corporation and probably our land. Things will be happening in different ways. What will happen to our subsistence rights? Will our land be used to generate dollars to make a profit? And what kind of impact will it have on us natives? Alaska Native Settlement Act, better known as ANCSHA, is complex, hard to understand, hard to analyze, and harder yet, very hard to solve the problems. In my opinion, it had to be written by a Philadelphia lawyer, because it's the only one that could understand it. ANCSHA has created hard feelings among our own people. There's a real wedge between all of us here in Kodiak. Some of our shareholders are disappointed because there has been no dividends. Others are frustrated because they lack the knowledge about corporate structure, corporate matters. And others are bitter. And there are many reasons for that, and God only knows. I went to the convention last month, the AFN convention. Their theme is unity. And right now, I can't see us Natives having unity statewide. The reason is very simple. We don't even have it in our own region. It doesn't make any difference who we have for a coach. We can't score unless we have teamwork. And that's one of the things that we're lacking right here in our own community. If all regions could unify, I feel that anything would be possible. If we continue fighting, we are going to destroy ourselves, and we will have no one else to blame but ourselves. That is all the comments I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Sanderson. Thank you.
So test 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
On subsistence, so our lifestyle have remained very much the same, no matter what have been going on around us. However, since the passage of the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act in 1971, our main concerns have always been focused on land, subsistence, family, and our future. Although the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act have shown some benefits in some ways, such as consolidating Native lands in Alaska and the means of Native corporations established through the Act have acquired economic influence. And even at that, it have not changed our village way of life, and I don't think it ever will. We have always had a strong feeling that the land always did belong to us and to our children. But since the passage of the Act, it somehow have created a negative feeling due to the fact that someday we may lose our land because of certain laws that we may have to look into in 1991. And going into that 1991 laws, I don't know anything about it, and I don't believe there is anyone around that know very much about it, and it needs quite a bit of translation for us Native people to understand. So at that, that's all I've got. And I thank you very kindly for giving me this opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Semyonov.
My name is Alan Penemeroff. I am the president of the Karluk IRA Council. I do have a couple people that are here with me. Zoya Shugak, one of the elders, and my son, James. James is sitting up there. I'm a former president of the Karluk IRA, Karluk Corporation. Since 1980, been merged with the regional corporation Koniag. I'm also a former member of the board of directors of the regional corporation Koniag. Most of what I do have to say is mostly related to social activities in regards to the village IRA council, tribal council. Subsistence. But before I do go into that, one of the things that you have mentioned earlier sort of put something in my mind in regards to the people who have been completely ignored, and that's our children that have been born after 1971, and made me think about the baby I just had about a week and a half ago, or my wife had about a week and a half ago. What could be done to be able to right the discrepancy that was done to those people who were born after 1971? In other words, they've been discriminated against. That's basically what I feel. Something has to be done to at least make these people recognize in one way or another. Myself and my boy James here, Zoya, were all called natives on paper, and then we got these other people who are actually, you don't even know whether they're native, non-native. One thing for certain, they are U.S. citizens.
Native people were independent sovereign nations before the Europeans came, and they retained what they called limited sovereignty even after England and France and all of those countries set up shop in the Americas, and even after the United States of America was established. The native tribes still had in a limited way the sovereignty that they had enjoyed before the Europeans ever landed in America. And that has been the theory for native sovereignty and Aboriginal rights, not only in the United States, but in Canada and in every other country where there are native people since that time. Now, it's one thing for native people to say today, well, we have certain rights under international law. The trouble is you have to find a court that will recognize international law and apply it in the United States of America. Principles of international law are re-entering the, are finding their way back into the whole idea of native rights today. But that is a process that doesn't occur suddenly. It takes place over a long period of time. But international law remains the principles of international law remain the foundation for asserting native rights in the United States and many other countries today. I'm just saying that it's a process that takes quite a while, and you can't just go off to the United Nations or to the International Court of Justice in The Hague, in the Netherlands, and say, I want you to grant an injunction against the United States to prevent the United States interfering with our land. It's something that has to be accepted by the courts of the United States, mm-hmm. first of all. Mm-hmm. I think, however, that you're quite right to ask about international law, because it's discussed more and more at the law schools, in the legal profession, and even in the courts now when the subject of native rights comes up. In Canada in 1973, the Supreme Court of Canada upheld the Aboriginal rights of Native people, and they did it on the basis of international law, and they relied on the precedents in the United States. The great Chief Justice of the United States, John Marshall, back in the 1820s and 1830s, set out these principles of international law. And in the United States and in other countries, the rights of Native people, even to this day, depend on those principles.
Do you see that ANCSA defense and or stands for the continuity of Aboriginal rights, or as it seems to be from where I stand, is designed to dissolve them and do away with the problem so that the system no longer has to deal with it?
Well, that's exactly what Congress wanted to do. Right. Because if you look at ANCSA, they said the Aboriginal title of the Native people of Alaska is hereby extinguished. Mm-hmm. It exists no longer. ANCSA also says the Aboriginal rights of hunting and fishing of the Native people of Alaska are hereby extinguished. They exist no longer. And Congress said, instead of these Aboriginal rights, from now on you will have certain private rights of property ownership that you will exercise as shareholders, mm-hmm. just like everybody else in America. Mm-hmm. or at least everybody else who has shares. Mm-hmm. And that was the idea. And they wanted to do the right thing. They thought it was a good thing. They thought it would help Native people. If it didn't turn out the way they thought or hoped it would, well, it didn't. But I think it's fair.